Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Irina Lagunina, Director of Special Projects at RFERL's Russian Service. Thanks for joining me today, Irina.
Thanks for inviting, Steve.
Okay. Now, in this edition, we are going to talk about something that is actually upcoming this week. I am talking about the fate of Memorial, the human rights group that Russian state prosecutors are seeking to shut down. There are two court hearings this week that could seal its fate. Two hearings, one in the Moscow City Court and one in the Russian Supreme Court, because there are efforts to close two related parts of Memorial, namely International Memorial and the Memorial Human Rights Center. Now, to me, this is really a major development in the ongoing Kremlin clampdown against civil society. Memorial has existed since before the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. And a big part of what it has been doing all these years, not everything, but a big part, is trying to find out the truth about the Soviet era and expose the crimes committed by the Soviet state against its citizens. That's in addition to a lot of work it has done, you know, relating to the present time. But this sounds like something a society would want, I'd argue, would want to help make sure that the horrors of the past cannot be repeated. But it seems like many in Putin's government do not want this kind of clarity about the past. Irina, how important do you think this matter is for Russia, and how do you think the court rulings will go?
Well, it's difficult to say how the court ruling will go, but as for the first part of the question, it turned out very important for the Russian society and for whatever is left of the civic society in Russia and human rights organizations. As we speak right now, there is a joint press conference going on in Moscow where the human rights organizations, or whatever is left of them in Russia, are explaining how the law on foreign agent was created in the country specifically to fight with the human rights community, to which Memorial Human Rights Center is a very important part of. The cultural organizations, the intellectual organizations, the Nobel Prize laureates all spoke, in various international organizations and people, namely like well-known people, wrote an appeal to stop this process of what they call the liquidation of International Memorial. This is very important for the country, and this is to some extent, the case that is the symbol of the repressive actions of Kremlin against civic society in the country. International Memorial is not only the organization that collected over 100,000 testimonies and artifacts of the Stalin's repressions. It's a huge library of facts, things, personal belongings that were donated by the kids and grandkids of those who perished during Stalin's repressions in 1937 and up to 1953, after Stalin's death. It's a huge library of evidence of those repressions. But Memorial is also a network of regional organizations. It has over 50 entities around the country. And, for example, one of the entities as a legal body, as an organization, INCOMI, which was one of the biggest organizations in the country call me Memorial just because there are so many remnants of people who died during Stalin's repressions and were buried there. Mm-hmm. So this unit of Memorial in Komi has only already been closed down in 2019 using the same criminal article against the so-called NGO foreign agents. So taking this into consideration, there might be a negative reaction, negative verdict of the court that would liquidate Memorial. This is answering your second part of the question. Also, what is striking in this particular case is that the expertise that claims that Human Rights Center, Memorial Human Rights Center, not the International Memorial, right. But Human Rights Center actually approved terrorism and extremism. Human Rights Center thinks that it's because of the fact that they put together the list of political prisoners in Russia. But the expertise that was provided to the court was made by notoriously famous in Russia Center for Social Cultural Expertise. This so-called center was formed by two people who do not even have appropriate education. Their names are Vitaly Batov and Natalia Krichkova, and they are known for the expertise that actually proved people or organizations guilty. They made expertise in case of Pussy Riot case in 2012.
Right.
They made expertise against another Memorial member, Yuri Dmitriev. They wrote about 50 expertise pieces against Jehovah Witnesses, claiming that they are extremist, either as organization or as people. In one case, though, this expertise, their expertise, was rejected by the Moscow court in case of Jehovah Witnesses prosecution. They wrote that the translation of the Bible that was made by the community of Jehovah Witnesses was extremist. So that expertise was denied, but that was the only case when this happened. Otherwise, the expertise was accepted by the court with the consequent verdicts of the courts. So that is very worrisome, and they call this center of expertise the unit of the FSB unit A, which fights against dissent and human rights community in Russia. So we'll see what happens, but I don't have high hopes.
Right, so you're saying essentially this is kind of a go-to pair or group that provides the courts with the kind of what they would call scientific or expertise on matters, including you know, whether texts or statements are extremist and things like that. So, you know, obviously if they've been used in many cases in the past, it doesn't seem to bode well. I'd say, I mean, and just to explicate a little bit, as you mentioned, at least part of the case against the Memorial Human Rights Center is the allegation that it has supported extremism and terrorism, and Memorial believes this is because it has compiles lists of what it says are political prisoners, some of them prisoners of conscience in Russia, which include members of Jehovah's Witnesses and other religious groups, including Muslim groups. So this is one of the ways that the state is going after Memorial. And you know, one thing I'd note, Putin has said some things about Jehovah's Witnesses, kind of setting them apart and So, you know, there's some, I guess, leeway there. But you know, as you say, this is, you know, the I guess the precedents in courts certainly don't seem to be very hopeful for Memorial.
Well, Steve, I can argue, no matter that Putin said that it's nonsense to put Jehovah's Witnesses in prison because of their belief, the prosecution continued.
Right.
And
absolutely.
After he said this, there were people who got up to 8 years in prison for their belief.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that certainly raises questions about what it means when he says something like that. That's a very good point and counterpoint to my statement. Irina, I guess and you mentioned press conferences. There have been appeals by many people, petitions signed by tens of thousands of people, calling for Memorial not to be shut down. And this week we'll see at least how the start of these court processes goes. All right, I'd like to move on to the other topic. Lots of things happening in Russia and in terms of Russian foreign policy that we're not going to discuss now, but it's all happening against the backdrop of the continuing coronavirus crisis in Russia. There are new surges of COVID-19 in a number of countries now. Here in the Czech Republic, there was a record high number of new cases on Friday, I believe. But certainly in Russia, the situation seems dire. New cases are down somewhat in the past couple weeks, but COVID-related deaths hit a record high on also Friday, I believe. And I think it's safe to say that President Vladimir Putin and his government have changed their tune a bit recently against this background. Putin had sent mixed signals for many months in the past over the seriousness of the problem and over vaccinations. But now the Kremlin has taken a more somber tone, I think, and the government has submitted legislation that would toughen restrictions, making vaccination or recovery from COVID pretty much a requirement for access to public transport and potentially other many shops and venues, other buildings. Irina, perhaps a difficult question. I mean, there's obviously huge humanitarian toll and effects of this COVID crisis in Russia. But on a political note, do you think Putin's handling of the crisis has had or will have a substantial effect on his level of public support and his political future?
Well, it's really a difficult question in terms of political future, because as we all know, they can draw whatever figures they like at the elections, being that Duma elections, parliament elections, or presidential. But in terms of his support, yes, it is dropping. Some research shows that it dropped to the support for Mr. Putin dropped to 20 to 30% in certain regions, and that's primarily because of the handling of the COVID pandemic. Putin himself, yes, you're right, he sent very mixed signals, and sometimes gave, I would say, pretty irresponsible example of COVID. Like he said once that there are lines of foreigners waiting to be vaccinated in Russia with Sputnik, and then they come back to Europe and buy their certificates because Sputnik is so good. This is laughable, of course. And I think that it's irresponsible for the leader of the country that suffers from pandemic as much as Russia does to say something like this so that people would not take it seriously, frankly.
And that was quite recently that he said that as well, despite what I said.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think that Kremlin's approach right now changes because on Sunday, for the first time, actually, Putin appeared on public and made a statement that he had a booster vaccine, and that was Sputnik. It's the first time when he publicly admitted that it was a Sputnik vaccine and not anything else. Mm-hmm. That's an apparent change in approach, since now he is trying to to be a responsible leader and to show that it is possible, it is doable, and it's necessary. On the other hand, Meduza last week published allegations of one of the Kremlin insiders, their source, that stated that the Kremlin is really frightened that the support of the population will go very, very low because of very unpopular lockdown measures in Russia. And so right now, allegedly, Kremlin is trying to distance from the lockdown measures and put the responsibility on the local leaders, local governors, and mayors. But that has been from the very beginning. I've always thought that it was a pretty smart approach in terms of Russia. Like in the United States, Russia has a huge territory, and the situation with COVID in different areas is different. So it's up to the governors to assess what measures they need to take. But still, Russia is so centralized, and Kremlin, accumulated so much centralized power that people still blame not local governors, but Kremlin for everything that's going on in the country. So it's catch 22 for Kremlin, and it's not really easy to distance right now. But the situation is really, really bad, and the recent figures, it's over 1,200 deaths per day, which is with a population of 143 million, is quite a lot. Today's news, for example, is that during pandemic, Russia lost every fourth veteran of the Second World War. Also, is not good for Kremlin because Kremlin's patriotic campaign is based on the admiration and respect for the veterans of the Second World War and of the memories of Soviet victory in the Second World War. So everything is playing against right now, against Kremlin and against public attitude towards the measures. They claim that Russians do not trust in vaccine because they do not trust authorities. But frankly, I don't think that this is the case. I think it's more deep. The conspiracy theories became mainstream in social media. Right now, conspiracy theories against vaccination. Level of, I don't even know how to call it, but the level of rejection of vaccine is the same as the level of rejection of 5G towers. Right. The general notion that it's not the vaccine, but some sort of chip is prevailing. So it's really not that much a political issue as the issue of proper education and proper explanation what is going on. And this is something that didn't happen in Russia since the start of the pandemic. People just deny COVID and don't believe that that it's really a lethal disease. And, plus the figures, the official figures of death rate from COVID are, some experts say, three times lower than the real estimates. And if you take the real estimates, that would be over 750,000, which is really a lot, and a lot for Russia.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, if you go with the figures for excess mortality, you know, Russia's right up there, I think second to the United States in terms of raw numbers. And then given the population difference, it's higher per capita. So, you know, that's another figure to be thinking about. I guess I would sort of summarize part of what you said, very interesting, but part of what you said by saying, you know, yes, the Kremlin may have changed its tone, but, you know, is it too little too late after, you know, a significant kind of foot dragging in terms of education, as you say, and then also campaigns by state media abroad, at least, to discredit vaccines in the West and that sort of thing. So, you know, that likely probably contributed to some of the attitudes in Russia. Okay, we're running out of time. We'll wrap it up there. Rena, thanks very much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thanks for inviting Steve.
Okay, great to have you on the podcast again. I'll be back next Monday, and please keep an eye out next Friday, December 3rd, for my Week in Russia newsletter. I'm taking a week off this week from that. Thanks for listening.